Call the order of the special board meeting of the Five City Fire Authority Friday, September 22nd at 10 a.m. May have the flag salute if I leave it. Ready, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, we may have a roll call.
Chair White.
Here.
Vice Chair Harmon.
Here.
Board Member Nichols.
Here.
And may we now have the agenda review? Do we have any changes, modifications, amendments?
No, ma'am.
Not here. Not here. Motion?
I'll move to approve the agenda as presented.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nothing carries. 3-0. Move on to presentations. I believe we look to our right. Gentlemen, listening gentlemen.
Good morning. Chief John Peters has joined me today, and we are going to provide forward follow-up to a previous conversation, which is an overview of fire dispatcher, commercial structure fire, and arroyo training. So what I will do is I will take you through the first part of the presentation and turn it over to Chief Peters to focus on findings and recommendations. Please stop us if you have any questions. So behind me is an aerial map of the structure at 501 East Grand Avenue in Arroyo Grande. This happened on May 11th. The initial call was transferred to Grover Beach Dispatch at 2:09 in the morning. If you look at the entrance at the top midpoint of the photo, I wanted to start there. This is obviously we know that this facility is there, but from the street it's very hard to recognize. It's a long flag lot driveway between some car maintenance shops. The driveway and then the turn that gets you into the facility is at such an angle that truck 5 can't navigate getting into this facility. Obviously, knowing that it's so close to 101, truck 5 would be the first unit on the scene. So when truck 5 arrived, the crew of truck 5 were offloading tools, ladders, hose, whatever they thought they would need, extra air bottles, and then carrying them manually down to the side of the fire. The red box and the arrows behind there are the units that were involved in the fire. Just a point of reference, the building that's on Grand Avenue with all the solar panels, that's CJ's restaurant, just to help you identify where we are. And then adjacent to CJ's is a hotel, and that's the parking lot that's behind, that's leading up to the structures that were involved. We did have exposure issues. That residential cross street is Alpine in Arroyo Grande, just bird's eye view. The yellow star is where the incident command post was eventually set up. Just to kind of talk to you about the construction of the facility itself, this is a typical mini warehouse facility, so steel construction, gated, secured, on-site managers, multiple storage units of varying sizes and configurations, hallways that would basically allow you into a smaller storage facility that was the size of a walk-in closet, obviously steel doors. And the top of the individual units were open. They weren't completely sealed, which meant that air could travel between units, in which case fire traveled between units. So just setting expectations and what happened that morning. One dispatcher was on duty at the Grover Beach Communications Center. The dispatcher advised fire units of a possible trap victim in the facility. Again, being an industrial fire and looking at that photo that I believe would be on your right, those steel roll-up doors needed to be cut with power saws. So our personnel were in full protective equipment. They were on SCBA bottled air. They were using tools that were working vigorously at the initial attack. It got to the point where all air bottles were expended. So as you know, every pack has an air bottle, and every fire engine has additional air bottles. We expended every air bottle on scene to the point where personnel had to stop work until we could get that situation remedied. So here's a basic timeline. Obviously, the actual timeline from the dispatch feed is much more involved than this, but I wanted to walk you through some key sections. And the blue boxes are the areas that we have identified that we need to spend more information or more time sharing information with you. So again, the initial call was transferred to the Grover Beach Communications Center at 2:09 a.m. At 2:11, that blue box, if you look, Truck 5, Engine 2, and Chief Officers were dispatched. At 2:20 a.m., resources began to arrive at the fire. At 2:30, we confirmed whether a second alarm, which means more resources had been requested. At 2:34, the dispatch center advised us they had requested it, and that was the first we learned that there was a significant commercial fire event going on in Los Osos at the same time, which meant that additional resources were going to be tough to get. 2:57 a.m., so about 3 a.m., so almost an hour into the incident, OES was dispatched. OES 386 was dispatched from Station 3. As you can see, at 2:11, it was not part of the initial dispatch. OES 386 arrives on scene. At about 4 a.m., we request an ambulance, which we'll talk about as well. So at 2 a.m., the incident starts. At 10:37 a.m., the last 5 Cities unit leaves the scene. And obviously, our fire investigator had spent more time there after that. So the first blue box, 386 was not part of the dispatch. So we're a three-station department, as you know. The Oceano station, for whatever reason, was not dispatched. So in Chief Peter's investigation, and he'll talk more about this, the dispatch center uses what's called computer-aided dispatch software, which builds the calls and sends the resources and tracks everything. It's also known as CAD. Within CAD, there's cards that recommend resources for particular types of dispatch. The recommend card did not have OES 386 on the list for a commercial structure fire. The dispatcher based their decision on the recommend screen rather than confirming what's called the black binder, a hard copy that's in the dispatch center. The incident commanders with the Five Cities Fire Authority were involved in managing, as you can imagine, a pretty significant large event and did not initially notice that 386 was missing from the fire. And as I already shared, OES 386 showed up about an hour into the event. Number two, FCFA confirms dispatch of a second alarm at 2:30. When I was responding to the fire, I heard Chief Heath on the radio as he was responding, knowing what kind of building this was and knowing that there was potential for a rescue, he requested a second alarm. So let me just talk to you about a second alarm. So as you know, we have automatic aid agreements. For this type of fire, our run cards would be everything from the Five Cities Fire Authority, an additional engine, and an additional battalion chief. So that just goes automatically with our automatic aid for this type of fire. A second alarm would have been two more engines, another truck, and another battalion chief. So those are pretty significant resources that were requested. So Chief Heath requested the second alarm. The dispatcher was busy in the center with multiple 911 calls plus police traffic. It did not hear that initial request for a second alarm. At 2:34, so shortly after we got on the radio and confirmed that the second alarm had been dispatched, dispatcher called CAL FIRE and was advised that CAL FIRE was engaged in their large-scale incident and that additional resources would be delayed.
Hey, Chief, can you run through the personnel, again, related to the second alarm, what the first response would be, and then the second?
Yeah, so let me go through it again, because I actually forgot about the breathing support unit. So the automatic aid, well, the initial structure response would be all of us, an ambulance, one engine, one CAL FIRE breathing support unit, that's what fills up the air bottles, and another battalion chief. That is what we should start with, besides ourselves. The second alarm is three more engines, one truck, and another battalion chief. So to give you an idea of what the impacts were in our county with finite resources and a small fire department, one of the resources we received was a fire engine from Santa Maria, just because the county was committed at that time. The breathing support unit was tied to the Los Osos event. So we didn't have that resource. We expended all of our air bottles. And the second battalion chief that was at the event actually drove to the Grover station and brought our USAR vehicle so we could begin filling our own bottles.
Well, if you'd have known the other air truck wasn't coming, you would have moved your truck, your air support quicker.
We would have, I mean.
Easy to say now.
If, you know, having the luxury of that second battalion chief who could operate that vehicle, yes. In a perfect world, staffing at the second, at the Grover Beach Station where the USAR sits, we have three people. We had a commercial structure fire. We needed that engine. That was brand new engine two's first fire that it pumped.
Yeah.
Because it's wheelbase, and for every other reason, thankfully it was there because that's what pumped the fire because the truck couldn't get in there.
Yeah.
So if we had additional staffing, we would have brought the breathing support capabilities on the USAR. But with what we had, that's how we deployed, and I think it was an appropriate dispatch.
Yeah, no, I just was thinking of, there's your answer. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The ambulance. Ambulance was not included in the initial dispatch. Obviously, an ambulance should be dispatched to all structure fires. I'll confirm structure fires. Obviously, this one had a potential rescue, which thankfully turned out to not be a rescue need, but also firefighter safety. We have had fires this year, thinking of Mono Court and Grover Beach with a modular home where firefighters were falling through the floor and getting caught on the substructure. So definitely need an ambulance. The ambulance was not listed on the recommend card, as I shared with you about OES 386, and the dispatcher, again, based their decision on it, what is and what is not on the recommend card versus consulting the binder. So I'm going to turn it over to Chief Peters to walk you through the findings and recommendations.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
We took a review of this incident once I talked with Chief Lieberman and started an internal review of the after ash report, basically what happened from a kind of a higher level, but totality what happened within the dispatch organization and what could have been improved. So one of the things that we found first off is that the CAD software that's currently in use in our communications center is inadequate for both police and fire dispatching. So it needs to be replaced, and that is something that we're actually going to be working on. I'll talk a little later about that. So the dispatcher was a solo dispatcher that morning, and quickly became overwhelmed with the amount of 911 calls, the amount of radio traffic, and the activity that was occurring. The dispatcher was handling multiple telephone calls coming in, but also the Royal Granite Police had requested the Grover Police assistance, and so they were handling police traffic and radio traffic at the same time. So the dispatcher missed the second request call because they were busy doing a lot of other things and did not hear the radio traffic. So the CAD program had a fault in it where it was not recommending everything in the resource list, because the CAD program will only give you so many lines of items or units that you can have, and then the additional ones go into an area that's called notes. And when you change the screen settings on your dispatch, when you log in, you have your screen settings set up. However big you make that box on your screen, that notes gets blacked out. So in this particular case, the dispatcher had their screen setting set up and that notes card was blacked out. So the additional units of ambulance and the OES engine were not shown because it was blacked out the way the CAD program has the listing all the available units is not practical or not possible in the current configuration. So we had those challenges right off the top. And then the other thing that we noticed is that, well, the dispatchers have been trained and to go by the recommends that's on the screen. Obviously, if all the recommends aren't there, they're missing stuff. And that's what occurred in this case. And the dispatcher who were handling other activities did not check with the black binder, which would have been ideal to do so. The five city engines had all started to respond and arrive on scene, and then their response types are, I've already covered the manual entry and the response types. On the bottom line, as you see, there's over 300 CAD calls for fire that are manually entered by the dispatch supervisor and some fire personnel that helped to control that and how those CAD calls should be entered. The system, when it updates from the CAD manufacturer, sends an update through the technology, through the internet, and it updates. We found out through our audit here that it makes changes automatically, and it sometimes it eliminates CAD calls or changes the CAD call completely. So we've reached out to the manufacturer after this incident when that was discovered. We did a complete audit of every CAD call and found out that about every 90 days there was an update going to the CAD program that was altering a call somewhere along the way. And we've made contact with the CAD vendor and said that's just not acceptable. They've since corrected that issue. And what we have implemented is also a personal audit. The dispatch supervisor actually goes through all the CAD calls every 90 days and makes sure that they're all the same. And then if there looks like there's anything out of touch, they get in touch with the fire liaison, one of the battalion chiefs, and make sure that the actual call is what it should be. So that was another thing that we found. So in general, the CAD programming is inadequate for what we need it to do. We have grown beyond its capabilities, and it has not kept up. It's a program that's been in place for about, since 2007, so 10 years. Right now, the police department is looking at a whole new CAD program that's going to involve fire-specific CAD as well. The county, the entire county, is actually looking at all new CAD RMS programs, and the sheriff is leading the way on a program. But I'll touch more on that as we go through there. On the human findings, the dispatcher, like I said, did not dispatch the initial resources. We have spoken to the dispatcher. We've actually conducted training with all the dispatchers in reference to what we found, that anomaly where the CAD box gets blocked out. So now they're all aware that there is an issue in the CAD, so just double check. And when in doubt, call the battalion chief and review the black binder. So we go on to our corrective actions. Again, the technology, it needs to be improved. There is a significant cost in doing so. The county right now, the Sheriff's Department, is looking at a complete CAD RMS program. They're already out to RFP, should have a determination made sometime around January on their vendor. We have been involved with those conversations and with the on-site testing of their CAD program vendors that they have. And it looks like the programs are much better than what are in use now. But we want to do a little bit more in-depth look of how it programs for fire. Because their new program will handle jail management, it'll handle report writing, it'll handle all of the computer dispatching for law enforcement services, and it has a fire block as well to handle fire dispatching services. But what we want to make sure is in our partnership with the fire authority is it specifically handling what we need here? If it wants to handle another jurisdiction that has a different setup, we have a unique situation where we have three different jurisdictions. So we need the boundary drop, we need different mapping than what other jurisdictions that are just like Paso Robles, for instance, handles Paso Robles and has their city limits in there. We can't have restrictions of city limits. So we're going to be involved with looking at that a little bit more in depth. And if that does, that program does not meet our needs, we're going to be going out for RFP for a new CAD vendor that will meet the needs of both police and fire. Again, the dispatch on the human side of things, the dispatch division has received updated training in reference to the programs. We have are working on a training program that's going to involve the Five Cities Fire Authority and the dispatchers working together and training together on calls for service. The current outline is under review, and my understanding is that the review is just about complete and is due back for a final approval through the Fire Authority. And it's anticipated the training will start sometime around November, so interdepartment training should help out quite a bit. And then what I have requested from the California State Post, the Peace Officer Standards and Training, is a management study of the dispatch center to see what can be improved, where we are currently at, where we need to focus on for our growing population as well as our increase in calls for service. For instance, our increase in calls for service last year for fire services were about 6% increase, which was equivalent to about the 6% the year before. So in just 2 years, fire calls for service have gone up about 12%. Obviously, that's put a burden on the dispatch center, but at the same token, the police calls for service at the dispatch center have gone up 29.8% in 1 year, just last year, and went up about 20% the year before that. So almost 50% in 2 years for just police calls for service. So across the board, the dispatch center is extremely busy and much busier than it was when we first implemented a consolidated dispatch center. So we have to look at those resources going forward. In this next budget year, this post-dispatch study will help us identify those necessary resources. And I could say just off of what we're seeing right now, there will be a substantial increase in resources needed for the dispatch center. And I believe that covers anything. If you have any questions for us, and we can narrow down some more stuff, if you
How many dispatchers do we have on duty at one time?
Majority of the day, there's about two dispatchers on. The goal for the contract that we have was two dispatchers 65% of the time. The contract for FICE's Fire provides for one additional dispatch personnel in the dispatch center. We do not meet the 65% at this time due to vacations or trainings or leaves of sort. And right now, the one position is not sufficient to meet that goal.
Thank you. Anybody else? I would really like to thank you for this study. It's, you know, I think it was certainly wasn't critical because we didn't have any injuries or deaths at the night of the event, but next time it could have been extremely critical. And knowing all this, I think it really moves everything forward, I hope. Yeah.
Well, we took it as critical in our evaluation because it is just one issue away from being a disaster.
Well, one half of one. It's close.
I do have some questions. I was wondering the way your dispatch is structured. It's not uncommon for dispatch, especially for police services, that because of, again, staffing issues, volume of calls, the police officers dealing with a lot of variety of things, that the dispatchers, at least in some jurisdictions, actually perform other police-type duties, like entering information related to reports, or assisting maybe more on an administrative level for the police officers to support them. And I was wondering if that is a situation that Grover has had to employ, and if so, is that an impediment for the dispatchers to focus solely on dispatch?
Well, it's not an impediment for them to focus on the dispatch. There are other duties that they perform, such as citation entries, which takes about 2-3 minutes per citation. And then there's also domestic violence report entries. But those are generally handled during the daytime by the supervisor who is not actually working the desk. The supervisor is handling all the administrative tasks. So at night, there are the dispatchers in the overnight hours handle a lot of the data entry for the citations and minimal administrative reports. They don't do any police reports. That's all handled by the officers, and those are conducted either in the field or in the report writing.
So with the data entry in the evening, are they required to get it all done regardless of call volume, or is that a secondary priority for the dispatchers if there is a high call volume? How do the dispatchers know what to balance then if they, you know, with your 50% increase in police volume, I can only imagine how busy they are trying to shuffle all of that. So
yeah, it's not a priority for them to get those. If they can't get to them, then they stay in the in basket, and then the next day when the records department comes on duty, they're picking up the slack and taking those. And a benefit is that the city has added a records position to our department. At least a part-time one, and hopefully we'll have that person on staff as well. So we won't have an impact with dispatch, but if dispatch doesn't get to the report entries and the data entry, then that sits because it can wait until the next day.
Right, and then with the part-time coming on, then that might help a little bit with resources.
Yeah.
Is that the plan? Okay. And then when I thought I heard you that they're also answering phone calls. So is that, you know, literally the 911, you know, call because, you know, whatever the emergency might be. Is that what you mean by answering calls? Are they also answering calls, you know, like when's the library opened or something like that? I mean, I know people call 911 because, you know, their coffee is not hot enough or, you know, absurd things like that that you hear, but...
We get some strange ones.
What do you mean by answering calls then?
They answer phone calls. They answer regular business lines, not during the day when the city is open for business. But generally, we don't get too many business calls during the day. You don't get hardly any of those at night. So most of the telephone calls that come in are for non-emergency services and then the 911 services.
Okay. Okay, and then where this black binder, what is the access to it? I've worked in different areas where there's been binders that you refer to, and how readily accessible is that black binder if you're fielding multiple calls? Now you have to open up a book, page through. I mean, has that been streamlined? Did the dispatcher say that, you know, it's user friendly? Is there a more efficient way than going to a hard copy binder and trying to find a page that will tell you when you're already dealing on a clock?
Yeah, it is. It's immediately behind the dispatcher's chair in a little round rotunda that has different binders. But that one's immediately available for them to grab, and it's tabbed open, and they can just open up to the type of call that they're needing.
And so then they're trained on where the items
yes.
are in the book. So
yes.
Do you find that that's another time sensitive thing when they have to resort to that?
Well, it is a redundant item that can be completed if the dispatcher has a question about the CAD or what's being displayed there or what the battalion chief has requested. So it is a redundant item. It is very minimal the time. It just takes a few seconds to grab it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a picture of exactly how the work is set up. And then you indicated that there was automatic updates, and it sounds like you have a good handle on, you know, how to address that related to finding out. And I wanted to know if the updates that you were finding that were being dropped, was that just unique to fire calls, or did police find that they were also dropping certain types of calls on their program as well?
It was system-wide. There was
system-wide
drops in calls
okay.
as well as mapping.
Just darn computer guys. Okay. So you said that training was conducted. I know that Five Cities Fire Authority will do some cross-training. So when you described the training conducted, was that just a overview related to the after-action report findings, just to make sure that the dispatchers, you know, was it related to the incident? What kind of training was actually conducted that's already been completed since May?
Specifically with the dispatcher that was involved, it was a complete review of the incident with
mm-hmm.
them, as well as retraining and reminding them of the steps that need to be taken.
Okay.
From the information that we developed off of the after action report, we realized that other dispatchers need to be made aware of that black box area.
Sure.
So we sat down with all of the dispatchers and went through it, hands-on training
sure.
through
sure.
the program with them, and actually were able to show them where the deficiencies were.
And do you find that made your dispatchers much more confident too? I'm concerned about, you know, where they're at personally, because, you know, I know how I would feel if, you know, I was involved in something like that. So do you find that they have a much more confidence level because, you know, you sat down and actually walked them through it, and we want them to know that, you know, we support them.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you think that they have a higher confidence level, that they're in a good place now?
Well, I believe they're still confident in their performance.
Sure.
I think now they're just reaffirmed on sure that they know they're aware of some of the faults in the system.
Right.
So they can override those in the time of need.
Okay. And then I guess the only thing that I have a little bit concern about, and maybe you could give me a little bit more information on what this actually means. It's kind of like if all else fails, call the BC and review the binder on an active call. So is it really a setup where if there's an active call and the dispatcher
dispatcher has questions, that they're actually going to be contacting a BC who is actually manning a fire?
Yes.
And Chief, can you explain to me how that is a good thing? I mean, it may be infrequent with all of the training going on, so it may be an obscure, but I'm kind of thinking, is this a bad precedent?
So I will finish by answering your question, but just going back into the systems that are in place. So there was a CAD, a software deficiency that's been discovered and remedied. So now when they type in commercial structure fire, they will see all the resources that are needed. Mm-hmm. If for some reason that doesn't look right, maybe it's dispatcher's experience and intuition, they can mm-hmm. grab that black binder and consult the black binder.
Okay.
Or if there's still some question, then okay. reach out to the battalion chief. Our battalion okay. chiefs would much rather have confirmation from dispatch of a question
okay.
than all of a sudden realize that OES 386 sure. isn't there.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. No, and that's why I needed, you know, literally, you tell me how this is going to work, and you tell me that this is good for, you know, it's a win-win for everybody, because if it works for you guys, then it's certainly going to work for the community, and certainly going to, us avoid any kind of catastrophe. And then, Chief, this is a question for you, and I don't know, because I can always follow up on my end. But do we have any idea how old that storage locker facility was, and perhaps permitting issues related to open drafting of their roof? And do you have any input from AG City related to the follow-up on the fire and the structure? Was there any concerns from the city?
We had Chief Heath and I had discussions with the building official in Arroyo Grande the morning of when we were looking to complete salvage and overhaul, and there was some structural weakness, and we were worried about a collapse on our personnel. So the building official actually brought in a consulting architect that morning, but as far as the background into the building, I would say we would have to circle back with the building official.
Okay, and the only reason I'm asking that is because if they're rebuilding, then I'm sure they'll have to have it up to code, hopefully, and that if there's some other concern about, I'll just say it, some yahoo that's living in a structure that isn't supposed to be inhabited.
Same thing.
Yahoo too? Anyway, that through the city and the building code requirements, that maybe then this actually might be a good thing all the way around, because it'll improve that and then therefore diminish any concern for Alpine residents and the businesses and residents
sure.
that are adjacent to that.
All that I've observed at this point is that those units have been demolished. The demolition is complete.
Okay.
And that's all I've seen.
All right. Okay, thank you for your time, and I appreciate the presentation. It was really important for us to hear the after, what was found. It was significant, as we all know, and it seems like things are under control, and not only that, we know what resources we're going to have to plan for in the future. So thank you for that.
Any question? I'm assuming one of the impacts at dispatch was the 911 calls reporting the fire, which was already underway. Do you have a quick, efficient, or polite way to get people off the line when they're calling saying there's a fire? Do you say thank you, we know, or what do you say?
There are sometimes, yes, they say thank you or ask, is there any more information? We have units coming or units are there. And generally, yes, it's a pretty quick conversation.
That can be very impactful. Yeah. And you have to answer the 911 at the same time.
That's correct. And in this particular case, I don't know how many were actually rung in, but on the prior fire, there was over 30 911 calls that were rung into the dispatch center.
Which fire?
The Mono Corp. Mm-hmm. So yeah. There's a high volume of calls. We have four 911 lines in the dispatch center, and we're actually going to be expanding to eight. So there is a high volume of calls that can come in at one time.
Yeah, and like in the daytime where you have extra staff in there, even secretaries, do you put somebody else on those 911 calls, or did dispatch have to get all of them?
Yes, actually, just to give you a little insight, what we're doing, about $450,000 in upgrades are coming to the dispatch center this year. It has not the CAD program at all. It's new radio technology that's going in for both police and fire, and as well as a third console position, so a third dispatcher position will be added to the building. So what we do right now is, if there's additional personnel, and even our records personnel, if they hear a major incident going on, they will go to the dispatch center and just answer the phones. And that allows the dispatcher to handle all radio traffic that's going on. And our records personnel right now are prior dispatchers as well. So it does ease that tension that's going on inside that room.
Yes, so you have some cross training.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
Maybe should we ask for any public comment?
Any public comment?
Chief Reed?
Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to share with you that Five Cities Fire and Grover PD Dispatch Center, we've been working on the training. We have a very comprehensive course outline here that we will be breaking out into monthly training sessions. And on top of this, we'll be also running some scenarios, fire scenarios, emergency, technical rescue scenarios, things like that, and have the dispatcher with us so that we could communicate, figure out what the best type of communications would be. The other thing I wanted to say is we've always had really good communication with our dispatch between the incident commander and dispatch. It's just that we also understand that dispatch is very busy with all the additional phone calls and other emergency traffic. So sometimes communication gets a little bit difficult, but for the most part, we have really good communications. And then the dispatch for initial resources, I have to own some of that with the OES not being there initially, because in my mind, I know what has to go to the call. It's just sometimes 2 o'clock in the morning, crawling out of bed, going to something like that. You know, you look at a duck on top of water, it looks all calm and cool, but underneath it's paddling like crazy. That's what my mind is like. And so it's easy to miss little things sometimes, or, you know, if you don't see that all the resources are coming, you know, it might be that that unit was dispatched to a medical aid call or something like that, and you just don't catch it. And then eventually you go, oh, you know what? I need to get that thing here. So once I realized it wasn't there and I communicated that to the dispatcher, they got that unit there as quickly as possible. And then the second alarm issue, I know I'm kind of pulling you guys all into the weeds, but I just wanted to better explain our situation. You know, when things get dispatched initially, there's a lot of radio traffic of all the units acknowledging the call and saying responding. And so a lot of times radio traffic get covered. And when that happens, it's very easy for a dispatcher to miss some of the information. And then I just wanted to let you know also, Engineer Serby, he's been our main liaison for dispatch. He's the one that's been working really hard, keeping the CAD system up, and with the in dispatch, they work as a very good team. And I just wanted you guys to know that he does a great job at that. Thanks.
I just have one more question. When you can't get the truck into something, where did you put it, on the side there? I'm just trying to envision you've got a problem and could...
You want me to tell?
Yeah, but...
The truck...
So,
come forward, sir.
Come forward, sir.
And please state your name for the record.
And state your name for the record.
Social Security number.
I'm Ian Bennett. I'm an engineer, but that day, for training purposes, we kind of rotated seats, so I was sitting in the officer seat. My captain was in the back as the firefighter, and our firefighter was doing driver's training. So anyways, we get there, hop out of the rig. The engine's kind of getting there at the same time from Grover, and shortly after us, I knew this particular site once we got there. just from previous calls and experience with the location. I knew it was going to be tight getting in there. I didn't know if we could do it or not. I've never taken the ladder truck in there. So I hopped out and ran kind of down to see what was going on first. Once I kind of got in and probably about where that red lettering is there where it says units involved, mm-hmm. and saw what we needed, you know, I just thought about what tools and equipment we would need from the truck company to get there. Seeing as though that rig is not particularly set up for a lot of water type operations, it's more tools and equipment. Where we were parked, right at the where it says entrance there, we just parked right there because they said I was going to start blocking the entrance from other units getting in there. So we just, you know, took a lot of tools off, set them on a ladder, and ran them down there. So that was, you know, for that particular time, that was what we thought was going to be the best use of our resource.
Sounds like it worked.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have anything else? Anyone else?
Last question would be, during all of this, was there any difficulty with, you know, how sometimes CHP or sheriff will intercept a call and then there's a delay getting it to Grover? I'm not hearing that this was one of those scenarios where, you know, the first call came in off of a CHP and they're, you know, they're routing it around. It seems like it came right to us and you guys were able to go. So am I correct in that?
Yeah, I think in the reference to the call transfer, that was a smooth transition in this case.
Okay.
It was the initial caller had no idea where they were at.
Okay.
Whether they were in Grover or on Grand, they just knew they were on Grand Ave.
Yeah, okay.
So that took some time for the dispatcher
sure.
to narrow down.
Okay, all right, no, thank you. That's all I got.
Thank you. Anything else?
Thank you.
Anything else, gentlemen? Okay. Moving on.
Thank you for your time, Chief.
You're welcome, thanks.
Moving on to routine business, do we need approval of the minutes? I know the minutes is approved as presented.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 3-0. We now move to community comment. Anybody? Anybody come forward into the consent agenda? Too much paper.
No, I think I have questions more related to the vehicle that's coming up
okay.
on the latter item. So, yes, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, I have no questions. So, I move that the consent agenda be accepted as presented and declare the vehicle as a surplus. And authorize the fire chief to facilitate the sale of it.
Second.
Move the second, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Oh,
public comments.
Sorry, I forgot public comment on it. So no one comes forward? No. We need to vote again, I guess. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 3-0. We're going to continue in business, which is consideration of adoption of the Five Cities Fire Authority 5-year strategic plan.
I'm over here again. Thank you. So before you today, I'd like to share just a handful of PowerPoint slides, but before you today is what I believe is the final product for your consideration of adoption of the five-year strategic plan. I will jump into the slides here, some of its review. As you know, this has been a process that started really in the spring of 2016, but it was based on a study that I did in 2015, shortly after joining the organization. Involved into far more than just a strategic plan. As you know, in our discussions, a strategic plan is a pretty simple document with some objectives, some timelines, some measurables, and funding to accomplish those. This became a very comprehensive document that served both as public education and kind of looking down the road as far as evolution of a full-service fire department and some of the geopolitical challenges that lay ahead. So the SWOT analysis, again, a pretty simple study that we did in-house. That's what drove the strategic plan. So the existing conditions in the strategic plan document are based on what we know today with trends, call volumes, staffing challenges, all of those things. How should we plan for the future? And within that, we talked about the fleet. A lot of that discussion generated the successful acquisition of two replacement fire engines and the surplus and disposal of one fire engine, and hopefully the second soon. A capital equipment funding, the no replacement funding for large ticket items such as SCBAs were included in the original JPA funding discussions. Staffing shortfalls, and again, the increasing 6% year-over-year call volume, coupled with an aging population and their health challenges and current and future development. If you haven't taken a drive along Fair Oaks behind the Roy Brandy Hospital lately, take a look at the medical office building and the crane and steelwork that's going in. That's just one example. I'm sorry?
Three stories.
I know. So the last component required for the completion of the study was compensation based on the proposed organization chart. We did piggyback with Aurora Grandy and participate in the compensation study. And after viewing those results, consulting with Treasurer Malico, we refined some of the numbers to make them what we believe to be more reasonable. This is a page from your staffing, from the strategic plan, just kind of showing current state where we are today. Based on the strategic planning process, what do those positions look like? What are they called? And then the variance and the net change. I will say that this is a very simple slide to look at, showing a net increase of 3.5 positions between current state and end state, but it's a pretty dramatic transition because you look at the reserve firefighter program of 18 positions being eliminated, and you look at the transition of 12 full-time firefighter paramedics being added along with the fire prevention bureau. And again, these are what I'm going to show you is towards the end of your strategic planning document, the supporting appendices. But here's the dollars that go into the staffing change that looked pretty innocuous at 3.5. So again, the columns, I've omitted zeros for simplicity. Current state would be where we are today. End state is the headcount and the organizational chart that's in the strategic plan. And then the variance, so the additional funding required to get us to where the strategic plan says we should be within 5 years. So bottom line, you're looking at an increase to the current budget of about $2.3 million for the staffing needs.
And that doesn't include, that's total, so that doesn't include each jurisdiction's breakdown.
That's correct. It's just the total number. And a couple of things, you'll see some asterisks next to firefighter and firefighter paramedic. On the top portion of the page, the firefighter salary is just a firefighter EMT. There's a lot of discussion about being interested in advanced life support and paramedic services, and most agencies pay an additional stipend to the firefighter medic. And so we took the medic differential out that we found in several jurisdictions and broke it out separately. So if you wanted to transition to advanced life support, you, based on these firefighter positions, because we do have a captain who's already a paramedic, you'd be paying that differential for that level of service, plus the equipment, plus the drugs, plus all the other requirements that go with ALS designation.
And Chief, is that also, am I not seeing, are those additional costs incorporated?
They are not, because in the strategic plan itself, the question was raised as to advanced life support versus basic life support. Mm-hmm. Staff hasn't been given direction one way or the other, but in projecting this, we did break out what that differential in salary would look like. just for the staffing needs.
For the staffing needs, okay. So there'd be additional cost then?
Mm-hmm.